is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the shooting machine that meets your team's exact training needs this holiday season with Dr. Dish Basketball's December end-of-year super sale. Shop now until December 29th to unlock their biggest deal ever. Buy one Dr. Dish, get one free. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinsing here with my co-host Jason Suckle tonight.
A little less festive tonight, Mike. I'm a little less festive than last week.
All right. Well, there you go. Day after Christmas. So we got an opportunity to watch some Christmas NBA and then some games tonight that we're going to briefly touch on a couple of key things that went on here on December 26th. Let's start there, and then we'll go jump into the Christmas games.
The Cavs are no longer in the record book for the longest losing streak in the NBA, Mike, in history.
Beautiful, beautiful. The Detroit Pistons.
Detroit Pistons, who, by the way, started the game up. I don't know if you saw this, Mike. Did you see that they started the game up 26-6, and they still lost the game?
I mean, I don't even really know what to say about the Pistons. I guess the biggest thing that I take away from the Detroit Pistons is, what is Monty Williams? That guy is just – I mean, he might legitimately be just stealing money from the Detroit organization. When you start talking about what they've – become and just the lineups that he played. I don't know if anything, I didn't watch the game. I don't know what really happened, but Asar Thompson played 9 minutes tonight in that game. And anytime I've watched that guy play, to me, he just seems like, again,
nine
I know he's
minutes
a rookie,
is being
but,
generous, Mike. He played 8 minutes and 32 seconds.
Okay, sorry. They rounded up to eight on ESPN on the box score. So how that dude plays 8 minutes when you've lost 27 games in a row. I just don't understand. And I know Cade had 41 tonight, and it just feels like that franchise.
Joe Harris got 0 minutes. Marvin Bagley Jr., 0 minutes.
Well, Joe Harris has his whole family in town. The whole family's in Detroit because I got the Christmas well wishes from Joe Harris Sr. So well, they're all in Detroit.
They didn't get to see his kid play.
Yeah, did not get to see him play, which I'm not sure that's a good or a bad thing in this case. But yeah, Detroit's a mess. I don't know what you do there. Monty Williams, any other coach, if he hadn't just signed to become the highest paid coach in the league, probably would have been fired at this point. And I don't know when that streak ends. It's going to be a while because I know that these two games were probably against Brooklyn back to back here were probably their two most winnable games over the next week to 10 days. So you might be looking at, it could be a while. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I don't even know. I don't know what's, I'm going to pull up their schedule. Cause I don't know what their schedule is, Mike, but I mean, listen, it's an embarrassment. They're 2-28, Mike. They're not going to, where are they going to end?
I give Cade credit for going for 41 tonight and just saying, hey, I'm not trying to have this. So kudos to Cade. Here's their next games at the Celtics.
That's a loss.
Home for the Raptors.
That's winnable.
At Houston, at Utah, at Golden State, at Denver, home for the Kings. Host
January
the Spurs
10th.
On
January 10th.
Hosting
it doesn't happen,
the Spurs.
If it does not happen by the new year, it's looking like, I mean, Utah's theoretically, then they have
Wizards, Hornets, Wizards. In the month of January, they have Spurs, man. Wizards.
They get to be on ESPN
Hornets and Wizards
on January 12th, Mike.
They have four theoretically winnable games.
They've got one ESPN game January 12th. January 12th, they're going to get on ESPN after winning a game. That's going to be their.
You know why that game's on ESPN?
No, why?
The Thompson twins. So the first matchup between the two of them.
Well, are they going to play? Is Sir going to play nine Hornets or what is he going to?
Amen back? I don't know if Amen's even back in the lineup yet from being injured. I feel like he is.
Yeah, he played the other day. He played the other day,
but he's not playing a whole lot. I know that he's not playing a whole lot. So listen, anyway, all right, that's enough Pistons talk. Give me your next topic from tonight.
The next topic from tonight is Andre Drummond, Mike. Well, here I'm going to read you Andre Drummond's stat line. Okay, he started tonight. He doesn't typically start. 24 in 38 minutes, 24 points, 25 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He was 11 of 13 from the field, 2 of 2 from the line. He had 10 offensive rebounds and 15 defensive rebounds, propelling the Chicago Bulls to a 118-113 win. He is the first player in NBA history since 1986. I don't know if first player in the NBA since 1986 to have the stat line of hold on of the 20, 24, 25, 3, and 2. Who was the last player in 1986 to do that, Mike?
1986. 25 points.
24 points.
25 rebounds. 1986. Man.
With 3 steals and 2 blocks. Oh, a first player to reach those numbers on 80-plus field goal percentage since who in 1986? He's a round mound.
So obviously I know who that is. So it's Barkley. But my guess was going to be Akeem was going to be my guess.
It was Charles Barkley, Mike.
All right. There you go.
That's pretty impressive. Andre Drummond.
Bulls have won 5 out of 6.
Yeah, then the number six to the Cleveland Cavaliers, they lost.
Cavs were the only team to beat them. So, all right, enough Bulls talk. Next topic for tonight.
The Memphis Grizzlies, 4 in a row. Your picks are looking a little better now, Mike.
Jaws brought it to life. Jaws brought my Pistons losses. I'm feeling pretty good about that one. Pistons losses is a positive. Memphis wins is starting to creep back in the right direction. 4-0. Theoretically, right, you could have anticipated this in terms of Ja probably was first or second team All-NBA last year before the shenanigans started. And I don't care what team you're talking about. You take a guy who's first or second team All-NBA off that team and things aren't probably going to go well. Plus you compound that with the loss of Stephen Adams. And then Brandon.
Listen, I thought you could have said Bryant Reeves, maybe, Mike. That would have been another.
Brandon Clark with the torn Achilles being out. So they clearly have not just been missing Ja, but bringing Ja back into the lineup and just what he brings to the table, both as a scorer, as a passer, as a facilitator. Obviously, it's made a huge difference, and so Memphis.
Don't look now; only four and a half games out of a playoff spot, Mike. Play-in tournament spot.
It's not inconceivable. Seems unlikely, but not inconceivable based on what they've done in these first four games.
Here, let me
certainly look like a different team.
Let me just tell you about the teams that are above them in the West. The Clippers have lost 2 in a row, although it looks like they're going to win tonight. Pelicans lost two in a row. Rockets have lost two out of three. The Lakers have been on a friggin' nosedive since the in-season tournament. The Golden State Warriors have lost two out of three. Phoenix has lost three in a row. Those are the teams ahead of them. And listen, we were doubting last week that there was any chance that they could get out of there. But the West was all of a sudden just a war of attrition going on in the West, and lots of injuries, lots of nonsense and tomfoolery. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, you can just hope to play San Antonio, and because they're terrible. They're terrible. My God almighty. You saw Wemby. Yeah. You saw Wemby got hurt in the warm-up line yesterday, right?
I did.
Was that yesterday or 2 days ago? Yeah, whatever.
That was before Christmas, but yeah.
Yeah. So, like, listen, I don't know what to say other than the West isn't looking as – listen, I almost feel like the NBA is going through what the NFL is going through. There's a lot of mediocrity and teams in the middle, and there's so many teams that are probably going to be playoff, like have a chance at the playoffs because these teams are just there's not more than two or three teams separating themselves, and everyone else is kind of just hanging out. I don't know how you feel on it, but I kind of feel like the NBA is going through a lot of what the NFL is going through
currently. It's not so much. I don't know. I guess what I look at it, I think we kind of anticipated this. It depends on how you look at these teams in the middle. Right?
Are these good teams? Are the competitive balance is better, I guess, maybe.
Are these good teams or are these bad teams? I don't know how to parse that out in terms of how you think about some of these teams in spots so, 5 through 12 in each conference. I don't know. Are the Clippers good? Do we think the Rockets are good? How do we feel about the Knicks? I think a lot of these teams – I would say to me, I think I don't want to say they're good teams, but I certainly don't think these teams are bad teams. I just think we have more teams. When you look at the bottom of each of the conferences, I think you have five bad teams. You have Charlotte, Washington, Detroit, Portland, and San Antonio. Those are five bad teams. And then I think you have a couple teams. Utah, I would put Utah in this category. I would put Toronto in this category. I would put Atlanta in this category. I'd put Chicago in this category. And I'd probably put Brooklyn in this category, where those are teams that are, they're not bad, but I wouldn't say they're good. To me, those are mediocre teams. And then once you get to the top eight in the East, I think those are relatively good teams, depending on, I guess you could maybe make an argument. In the West, I don't know. Is Golden State bad? Is Phoenix bad? Are the Lakers bad? I still think those teams are good teams. On any given night, I think they can beat a team that's above them in the standings. So I think it's a case of we have five really bad teams. Then we've got a tier of mediocrity. And then we got some teams who are good, but a lot of teams that are good but not great. And we have no idea how those teams are going to finish. That's what I would say.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough, Mike.
Anybody can beat anybody. I mean, I think it's like we talked about at the beginning of the season.
Except for the Pistons.
There you go. But I mean, when you go into a game, right? When you go into the game with any of these teams, like I don't go into a game with the Cavs and say, oh, we're playing Phoenix. They're the 11th seed in the West. That's an automatic win. I don't look at it and say, oh, tonight we got Brooklyn. We're gonna win that game, no problem. Atlanta. Like Atlanta's not very good, but I don't feel like you can just walk into Atlanta and say, we're going to beat them on any given night. I think there's only five teams that you can look at and say, you should win. You give a decent effort and you should beat Portland, San Antonio, Detroit, Washington, or Charlotte. But any of these other teams, if you don't come to play, you're going to get beat because I think those teams are all decent to better than decent. So that's where I sit with that.
Yep. Okay. All right. We're going to move in to the Christmas Day games, Mike, and we're going to talk a little bit about them and talk about players from the teams and like things that stand out. And we'll go chronological order, Mike. Does that make sense? Let's just go in order of the games happen.
Yeah.
All right.
You go ahead.
Admittedly say that I did not watch any of the first game because I was doing Christmas lunch/brunch stuff going on. So I will admit to not watching it. Although I was grief-stricken when I saw that the Knicks beat the Bucks. So obviously, you know, it seems like the first quarter dictated the game and the rest of the game was pretty even. Giannis had a good game. Brunson, once again, 38-4-6. Giannis, 32-13-6.
All right, so give me your player, man. Who's your player? Just give me a player from one of those two teams.
Let's talk about Brunson just because he's been all over the news this week about people calling him out. Or was what's her name, right? Was it
Becky Hammond said she was Becky short. Becky Hammond said he was too short to be a number one player on a championship team, which – I don't know if him being short or not being short has anything to do with it. I don't think he's the best player on a championship team.
I agree with that.
But
she apologized after that, saying she was basically just trying to say like he's not in the LeBron
right
tier of athletes. Which but the way she portrayed it or stated it probably could have been better is basically what she ended up saying. Like when she kind of slightly retracted the statement, right? Is that
right.
correct?
I don't think anybody would argue that Jalen Brunson is a top tier 1A championship caliber player. I don't think anybody's arguing that. I think Jalen Brunson probably is, I don't even know if he can be your second best player on a championship team. I think he's probably your third best player on a championship team. To me, I think that's kind of where he slots just because he is a liability on defense. I mean, he's putting up 26 a game, and he's having a great year. He's shooting almost 50% from the field. He's shooting 45%, almost 46% from three, dishing out 6 assists. He's having a fantastic, phenomenal year for the Knicks. But I think the argument that he – I don't think anybody's making the argument that he's a number one player on a championship team. And who knows with the Knicks – Mitchell Robinson's out, and Jericho Sims, their backup center or guy who was starting in place of Mitchell Robinson, is out. So I was a little bit surprised to see the result of that game. The Knicks played really well. The Bucks, I think the thing that people have been talking about all season with them and what we saw in that game on Christmas is they just have a deficiency when it comes to perimeter defense, especially when you start talking about their ability to guard point guards. They just really don't have anybody on the perimeter that can guard a guy like Jalen Brunson. And that kind of showed through. And despite the fact that their Bucks offense, I think right now they're the third ranked offense in the league, which is translates to NBA history as the third ranked offense in the history of the league because of how offensive minded this season has been. The Bucks championship hopes are going to come down to, can they get their defense to a reasonable level? And I think it was on the low post, if I'm not mistaken, but when their four best players are on the floor, so Giannis, Lopez, Lillard, and who am I missing? Middleton. When those four guys are on the floor, they have their defensive rating would be the number one defense in the league in the minutes that those guys have played together. So
they haven't played many minutes together, basically.
They have not played, right. They have not played very many minutes together. Correct. They have not played very many minutes together, but I think if they get it together, they'll have an opportunity. So, look, Brunson, great player, having a great year. Not the best player on a championship team. Debatable as the second best player on a championship team. And I would argue probably best fit as the third best player on a championship team with that's nothing to sneeze at. Brunson's a great player. Any team would love to have a guy like that. Tough, physical, hard to guard, clutch. It just felt like, I know we talked about this last year in that playoff series with the Cavs. It felt like Brunson could get whatever he wanted when he wanted it. And so Brunson's a good player, just not at the level that is going to lead a team to a championship by himself. Let's put it that way. All right, the Bucks. Chris Middleton, I think when you start looking at what the Bucks are, I think you have three guys that you know, as long as they're healthy, you kind of know who they are and what you're going to get, right? Giannis, clearly a potential MVP. Third in that initial straw vote where he was behind Embiid and Jokic, which probably rightfully so, but Giannis is as good as he's ever been. And then Lillard, you know what you're going to get out of Damian Lillard on the offensive end, and you know you're not getting a whole lot of him on the defensive end. And then Brook Lopez, you're going to get good defense. He's going to be able to knock down threes and spread the floor. Pretty consistent player. And then Middleton is just the guy that he's the wild card. What Chris Middleton are the Bucks going to get for the remainder of the year? And how much of what Chris Middleton, when he's at his best, how much of that can he bring to the table night in and night out? Right now in the regular season, he's played in 25 games and he's averaging 24 minutes a game, shooting 48% from the field, 37% from three, averaging 13.8 points per game. I don't think at that level, you're probably going to need more out of Middleton than what you're getting there. And I think the other thing is that he hasn't been nearly as good defensively as he was the year the Bucks won their title. And he just doesn't have the same level of a mobility coming off these injuries. So I think moving forward, to me, he's the bellwether for what Milwaukee is going to become.
Yeah. I mean, if he's not healthy or he's not able to play, I think they're the third best team in the East at best. I think the Celtics and the Sixers are better than them if Middleton's not there. I don't know.
There's a regular season team. I still think you match up Milwaukee and Philadelphia in the playoffs, and I would bet on Milwaukee every
without Middleton? Without Middleton?
Without Middleton. Yeah, without Middleton.
No.
I don't trust Embiid, man. I don't trust him. We'll get to that. All right, next game. Go ahead.
Golden State losing to Denver. I'm going to pick Jokic, and here's why I'm going to pick Jokic. It's not for the stats. It's for the fact that he shot 18 free throws yesterday. What a joke. I don't know. I watched bits and pieces of that game.
Come on, Steve.
No, I'm on Steve Kerr's side on this one. I'm on his side a little bit. Like, listen, I love Jokic as a player, but there were at least four times that he supposedly got fouled, that he flopped around like he was a dead fish, like out of water, and they called fouls and he got free throws because of it. Four that I can think of on the top of my head. I'm like, I don't know. I just.
All right, here's what I'll say.
They got to fix that.
I'm not a huge fan of guys flopping for fouls and getting calls. I'm not a huge fan of that. And yet, at the same time, I will say that playing against players who know how to draw fouls, that is a skill. The ability to draw a foul, make a facial expression, contort your body in such a way that convinces the referee that you got fouled. There are just some guys that have a knack for doing that. And then there are other guys who seemingly get hacked all the time and never get a call. And I don't necessarily think it has to do with how talented the player is or what their stature is in the league. I just think it has to do with some guys are really good at drawing fouls and some guys are not. And I can speak to, again, my playing career is, we are a long way removed from that, but I just,
you went to the free throw line a lot, Mike.
What's that?
You were Jokic, weren't you? You were flopping around.
No, I was not a guy that went to the free throw line. I mean, you know, obviously depending upon how much offense you play and how much you have the ball in your hands, you get to the free throw line more or less based on that. But I was never a guy that felt like I was great at drawing fouls. The guy I always think of is Kenny Mouse McFadden, who played for Cleveland State. Those of you who are old like me might remember that Mouse led Cleveland State to the upset.
I never heard of Jimmy Mouse McFadden, Mike.
Kenny, look him up. Kenny. Cleveland State. You're too young. But anyway, played against Mouse, pick up basketball, and he just had a way of being able to draw fouls and did that during regular games and whatever. But there are lots of guys that are like that just can draw fouls and know how to do that. And so I think that as much as you might think, you know, whatever, their refs are bailing them out and this and that, a guy who has the ball a lot and shoots a lot and knows how to draw fouls, it's a skill. And look, it's not one that necessarily I love seeing get rewarded, but it is something that players are good at. Jokic is good at it. Obviously, James Harden in his day was good at it. Trae Young is very good at it. Makes people angry, but nonetheless, it's a skill. So I get it. And I never like to see coaches whining about referees. I much prefer to see coaches coaching their team. And that goes for anybody, not just Steve Kerr.
Okay.
All right, so I'll go with Golden State. And I think you have to go with Draymond, even though he's not there, because since he's been gone, I think now they're, what, 4-2 after that loss yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, since he's been gone.
Yeah.
And look, they're not better without him because of what he brings to the table on the defensive end of the floor and what he brings as a passer and connector and all the things that he's done for the last 10 years for the Warriors. But maybe it's a case where his personality has just worn out the guys who've been around him for 10 years. I got to imagine that Steve Kerr is worn out. And as much as Klay Thompson and Steph Curry might love Draymond, at a certain point, you got to start looking at the guy going, dude, like, what are you doing? So it'll be interesting to see, A, when Draymond comes back, B, how the team continues to play without him, and then C, when he does eventually return, how do the Warriors react to that in terms of reintegrating him? And then how does he behave when he comes back from that suspension? Is there a change in his behavior?
Behave.
Is there a change? Is there a change in his behavior? Does the suspension have any effect on the way that he puts himself out there on the floor? Or are we going to get crazy Draymond the way we've gotten him for the last, I guess, year since he punched Jordan Poole? And I don't think the guy's going to change. I would be stunned if he does. And look, the Golden State run of being a legitimate title contender is over. I know I made the case that the title in 2022 feels like, again, I don't know if fluke is the right word, but it felt like a very, very strange NBA championship. It didn't feel like that was a team that was the best team. And I know they won it, and kudos to them, but it was a weird feeling. I just don't think of that team as being a championship team. And I guess I'll leave it there.
All right. We're moving to the next game, the Boston Laker game. And this was the game I probably watched the most bits and pieces of. I did not watch it live, but I did catch it on NBA TV today, Mike. It was on NBA TV. So I did catch a little bit of it. The Celtics dominated, and I'm going to pick KP. I'm going to talk about Kristaps Porzingis, because I think if Kristaps Porzingis is healthy, that the Boston Celtics are the best team in the NBA. I'm willing to say that if he's healthy and the rest of the team is humming the way they've been humming, Jason Tatum doesn't even, I mean, he's just so good. And Porzingis, he just comes out there and just does his business when he's out there. But his big thing is this: he's got to stay healthy. He's so injury prone. I would give it a 40% chance that he stays healthy, like, because he's going to get hurt, because that's just what his MO is at this point. But when he's out there, he just spaces the floor so much. He creates lanes. He allows, you know, he draws the bigs out because he can shoot the basketball, and then he can put the ball on the floor. He had a really nice move. Did you see that really nice move he had to the basket yesterday, Mike?
He's good attacking closeouts when somebody comes out on him, because he has such a quick release, and then he's able to attack. So yeah, he does.
He I honestly think if he stays healthy and that team's rolling, this might be the Celtics' year, Mike. It really might, because I don't know who in the long run can in a 7-game series how anyone's going to match up with them. I mean, when you look at that starting lineup, you go Drew Holiday, Derek White, Porzingis, Tatum, Brown. I mean, Derek White's the fifth best player. Where would he be on the if you were talking about on the Cavs starting five right now? Like, I know obviously Mobley's been out, Garland's been out, and Mitchell's been out, but like, I probably put Derek White like as the third best starter if we're healthy. Right?
It's fair. Like, that's fair.
I mean, I don't know. I just think that and that's their worst starter. Their biggest problem is their bench is kind of weak, right? I mean, when you look at this,
and they're starting five for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Horford's solid. I mean, but he's old man now at this point. And I guess, you know, Pritchard's probably their second best player off the bench. But listen, I just think Boston is really, really good. And I think that it's going to be hard to beat them. So that's my stance on Boston and Kristaps Porzingis. If he's healthy, but if he's not healthy, I think they're very beatable.
Porzingis is definitely the key to them winning a championship. I mean, I think he gives them a dimension and puts them at a level where their five can make up for the conversation that we always have about Jason Tatum. I don't think Tatum is that guy. I don't think Tatum is, I'm putting this team on my back and I'm going to take you through four playoff series. Obviously he's capable of having huge games, which we've seen him do. But I don't think that sustained wise, I just don't think he's good enough with the ball in his hands, generating free throws, generating plays for other people. I just don't think he has that capability at the highest level. That's nothing against Jason Tatum. I think he's a very good player. I just don't think he's at that highest level of NBA superstar. And so Porzingis gives them a dimension that they just didn't have. You have to guard him on the perimeter. He's got such a quick release. He's such a good shooter. He can attack closeouts. He can post up smaller guys, which he wasn't able to do earlier in his career nearly as effectively. And then you think about what he brings to the table as a 7'3" dude who maybe he's not as mobile as he was in his days, as he was in his days with the Knicks before his leg injuries. But yeah, he's still a guy who's 7'3" with a long wingspan that can alter shots and move and do things. And he's not a 7'3" stiff that can't get out and guard people. He can move to enough of a degree that he makes the Celtics effective. As you said, they can switch basically everybody for sure with their four guys, with White, Jrue Holiday, and then the two Jays. Those four guys can clearly switch across multiple positions. And then Porzingis, I think, is probably capable in some circumstances, and certainly his rim protection is valuable. So yeah, I think Porzingis is definitely the key to the Celtics season, whether or not he stays healthy. And if he does, then they're going to be right there at the end, knocking on the door to win the title. I still don't think they win the title, because I don't think when it comes push to shove, I don't think Jason Tatum goes toe-to-toe with whoever he's going to need to go toe-to-toe with over the course of the last two or three series. I just think at some point they get beat, but we'll see. Porzingis is definitely the key. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. And then on the Lakers, I'm going to go with LeBron. And I know that he's a guy that on the Christmas game, he didn't really – I mean, it wasn't LeBron's best effort. Let's put it that way. AD had a big game. LeBron was very pedestrian in that game. And I just feel like the Lakers, you look at them, since they came out of the in-season tournament, they really haven't done a whole lot. And if you look at their record, I think they were 4-0 in pool play, and then they went 3-0 to win the in-season tournament. So in-season tournament, they're 7-0. And in games that were not part of the in-season tournament, they're 9-15. And I know that's not an apples to oranges comparison, because – some of those in-season tournament games obviously counted as regular season games.
They're actually 10-15 because they're 10-15 because the championship game is a nothing game. It means nothing.
Sorry, you're right. Sorry.
So I want to give them a little bit. I want to give them a little bit more credit.
Got it. So anyway, I think the Lakers, when you look at where they are and where they stand, obviously LeBron and AD have both been healthy. I think combined they've missed, I think, 5 games, if I'm not mistaken. And if you would have told Lakers fans that, hey, those two guys are going to miss 5 games in the first 31 and you're going to be 16-15, that would make people a little bit worried. And so I think if you're LeBron looking around going, hey, we've only missed five games and this is our record, I think what you're going to start to see is LeBron's going to start to put some pressure on Rob Pelinka to make some kind of a deal. And I don't know what that deal looks like and who they have to package, but I don't think the Lakers roster today is what the Lakers roster is going to look like heading into the playoffs. Let's put it that way. So,
yeah, I agree. Something's going to happen. Something's going to drop.
Yep. Next game. All right.
I'm at the 76ers, Mike. Now, obviously Embiid's hurt. I'm not choosing Embiid. I'm taking Kelly Oubre. Okay. The guy got hit by a car. And the last night he dropped 25 points.
Played 40 minutes, really happy. Baby.
I'm really happy for Kelly Oubre. Like, they were saying
assists,
it was super.
Three assists for Kelly Oubre.
A steal and a block.
He was dishing, baby.
6 of 9 from three. Listen, I'm giving Kelly Oubre a lot of credit. That guy got hit by a car. He was seriously injured. He's come back, and he had a heck of a game yesterday. I know they lost the Heat. But still, it's pretty impressive. Listen, that game, as soon as I saw that Embiid wasn't playing, got zero interest for me. I'm going to be honest with you, because I thought for sure Miami was going to walk away with the win. And they hung in there. And Miami actually, it was tied going into the fourth quarter. I ended up turning it on and watching bits and pieces of the fourth quarter. I was flipping between that and the NFL game. So, listen, I'm giving Kelly Oubre the flowers that he deserves. 25 points, Mike. There you go. Kelly Oubre.
Kudos to Kelly Oubre. Had a great season. And at this point, you got to say he's an important part of what the Sixers can do. Embiid out with the ankle obviously put a damper on this game. And as we talked about last week, Embiid has been on an absolute tear. And right now he's the front runner at the whatever we are, quarter poll, third of the way through the season poll of being the MVP. But for Joel Embiid, none of it matters. And for the Sixers, none of it matters until you get to the playoffs. So Oubre's been an important part of what they've done so far. Kudos to him for coming back from the car crash. And boom, Philly. All right, Miami. Jaime Jaquez.
Oh, this yeah, dude, yeah, 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 yeah.
This guy, dude has he's been got, killing he's, it.
You wish he had his hair, Mike. That's what you wish.
Absolutely. No, I don't. I did not. I never, even if I had the capability of growing his hair, I would never have his hair. I don't know how you play basketball with hair down to your shoulders. That is beyond me. Completely beyond my grasp of reality. But Jaquez has been great for the Miami Heat. And when you start looking at a guy who can impact the game in a ton of different ways, good passer, good shooter, tough, smart, just a guy that when you start looking at who's going to be first team all rookie, I mean, Jaquez is clearly probably after the top two. Jaquez is probably, he's probably number three. Him or Brandon Miller, I would say, are probably the next two that are in line to be first team all rookie this year.
Where are you, Scoot?
Certainly nobody.
Where are you, Scoot? No,
Scoot is not under consideration at this point. Scoot is not under consideration. But Jaquez has just been a high IQ guy, a guy that has fit in beautifully with what Miami already has. And it's interesting when you watch their team, he's already become a very, very important part of what they do, both as part of the bench unit and then when he mixes in with the starters as well. And I still don't necessarily buy into Miami, but I didn't buy into them last year and they went all the way to the finals. So what do I know? Jaquez has been a huge addition for the Heat and he's going to be a huge addition going forward in the playoffs. So Jaime Jaquez, Miami Heat.
Hey, I'm going to throw another rookie into the ring there. Craig Porter Jr. is going to make an all rookie team, right? If he continues to play at his level, like it might be third team. He's got to.
Maybe. I mean, if he's got to get minutes. If he keeps getting minutes, if Garland and Mitchell, I mean, Mitchell's obviously missed quite a few games and Garland's going to miss a ton more. Yeah, if Craig Porter Jr. gets minutes, I would have to think that he's going to get some consideration. I don't know if they go out to third team, but for sure second team. Maybe they do a third team all rookie. I don't know. But
all right,
he's been good so far out of nowhere. Certainly nobody expected that.
The last game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Phoenix Suns. I'm going to choose to discuss I'm going to choose to discuss Devin Booker, and here's why. Okay. Devin Booker had the audacity last night that when he threw a ball, not a great pass to Metu. Did you see this play?
Yes, yeah, I saw
Metu,
this play.
And then he yelled at Metu about him not coming back at defense. Devin Booker, calm yourself, because I've seen you play many a basketball game, and I've seen you make many of a mistake and then just stand there with your hands on your head pouting. I'm disappointed.
There was a lot of that from Phoenix in that game. There was a drive by Durant. Durant got stripped and he stood there.
Bill Simmons made a great point on the pod. I don't know if you listened to it today or not, but he said the body language doctor for the Kansas City Chiefs and the Phoenix Suns are not very good right now. That's what he said. He said that on the podcast.
I would agree. The body language doctor is not good, especially Durant. Durant just looks exasperated all the time out on the floor. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I can't get guys to do anything. And I don't know if Durant's still leading the league in minutes, but he's averaging like 37 minutes a game. And that's just ridiculous. Yeah. And your guy Booker, Luka was just ready. So I'm going to talk about Luka. We can do that in conjunction with Booker.
What was Luka's headband last night? Come on,
the headband Luka is sweet, man. Headband Luka. It's just, it almost feels like he's like mocking people. He's like, I'm going to look as goofy as I can and then still drop 50 on your head. That's what it feels like to me when I watch
He's like, it's like when the guy pulls up at the rec center and he's playing and he just torches you.
So the white men can't jump, you know, you're trying to throw him off the scent and then he's just killing dudes. He was spectacular last night and just scoring in so many different ways. I mean, he was 8 of 16 from three and got to the basket. He's just so strong and powerful. And there's nobody that has better footwork inside the key than Luka. I mean, he just gets in there and he knows how to use his body. He knows how to pivot and take advantage, get guys off balance. And then boom, he just is scoring over the top of them. And his passing, he is just so incredibly strong. There's so many times where he gets to positions where he'll pick up his dribble and he'll be doubled. And all of a sudden the ball's flying across court, hitting a dude right in the hands for a three, or he'll get stuck down inside. And it seems like he's surrounded by like three guys. And all of a sudden he's throwing this wraparound pass out to the corner. He just is an unbelievable passer from a vision standpoint, but also just from a strength standpoint. Some of the releases and just amount of times he's being guarded by multiple guys and he's still able to get the pass out to somebody so they can score. It's just phenomenal. And I think he has a special place in his heart for Devin Booker and the Suns. And he doesn't mind saving some of his best performances for Phoenix. And he certainly did that last night. He was unbelievable. And I think with Luka, the question still is moving forward, what is the best kind of team to put around him? And if he was on a better team with better options and better offensive players, what would his play look like? I do think as I was watching him last night, I just kept thinking about Larry Bird and how Bird would probably play almost an identical game to Luka if Bird had grown up and was playing in this era in terms of his grandson's playing, right? Who's
Larry Bird? Larry Bird's grandson's playing in like high school and he talks to people all the time. He's supposed to be good, right?
Yeah. I think I saw a video of that at some point, but I just think Bird, to me, Luka is like the generational evolution of Bird, and they don't play exactly the same because the eras are different. But I think if you plopped Luka into Bird's era, he would play like Bird. And I think if you plop Bird into this era, I think Bird would play a lot like Luka. He'd have the ball in his hands a lot more, operating as a guard rather than a forward. You would just put the ball in Larry's hands and be like, hey man, just go do your thing. And Luka is just spectacular. The things that he can do and the passes that he can make and the shots that he gets, all while, again, being a very good athlete, but not an explosive athlete by NBA standards by any means. So that's it, man. We did it.
That's it. Yeah. Are we going to celebrate a little bit for a second?
Sure, I'll give you 30 seconds. Go.
Listen, they're in the playoffs, right? I mean, I know they're not officially, but they have to have a catastrophe of things to happen, including like all these other teams that have to win all their games and whatnot. But man, oh man, is this exciting or what, Mike? Are you excited for Cleveland Browns playoff? Do you have Flacco fever, Mike? Are you buying in? Flacco fever.
I mean, you have to some degree, right? I mean, he's been really, really good. And look, I've said it all season long. If the Browns get average to above average quarterback play with their defense, they're going to have a chance to beat anybody. And I don't look at anybody, honestly, in the entire league and say that there would be – you put the Browns out on the field. I'm not saying that the Browns are going to win the Super Bowl. That's not what I'm saying by any means. But there's no team in the league that you could put on the field across from the Browns, and I feel like we would have no chance against – that's what I'm saying. I think anybody – look, we would not be favored against all these teams, but I do feel like because of our defense, that gives us a chance in just about any game. Now we're going to have to sort out the kicking game. If both the punter and Dustin York are both out, then you got to get that figured out before the playoffs. But I'm assuming they will. I'm assuming those guys will get healthy. Bjork,
at the same time, with you saying everything you just said there, would you be surprised if we came out in the first round of the playoffs and played against the AFC South team and just got lit up? Would you be surprised?
No, I wouldn't be surprised. No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. No, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Would not be surprised at all.
There's only a fraction of me that would be surprised because the Stefanski's 10-0 against the AFC South.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't – I mean, again, that won't matter. It doesn't really matter. I think, yeah, we could easily lose in the very first round. Don't get me wrong. But I also don't think there's a team that – you could put out there that I would say, we have no chance.
If we had to play Kansas, I would love to play Kansas City in the first round. I think we would manhandle them. Manhandle. I want payback from 3 years ago.
I don't think they'd have anybody to throw to. I agree. I think the Browns would lock them up pretty easily. And I guess it makes you nervous still. It's like I always say, I don't like playing against running quarterbacks. And going all the way back to John Elway, just when you have a guy that you have completely wrapped up and then suddenly they can take a 3rd and 8 and make it into a 1st down. So I get a little nervous going against guys that can run, but I still think that the amount of pressure that this defense puts on quarterbacks and then our secondary, although they're banged up, who am I thinking of? Who's our good
Ward.
Corner?
Ward.
Yeah, thanks.
Martin Emerson Jr. and his 3 penalties in the first quarter.
And Newsom. If you have those 3 guys, I just think the defense is good. And that's the bottom line. So they should win the next 2 weeks. I mean, again, you should go in there 12-5. I mean, unless the last game is meaningless and you just play whoever, but yeah. I think you should win the last 2 games. So we'll see. Thursday night, we're only a couple days away.
Yeah. That's the nice thing about Thursday night football. You can get the game and get excited for it on Thursday. I'm excited for it.
All right. Let's leave it there. Happy holidays, everyone. Thanks for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.